It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
It's hard to believe a week already went by since we kicked this thing off. Now, they say time goes faster as you get older. I think that's absolutely right. I'm not really that old. I'm not even 60. But now, I went over and visited my mom today. She's 95. You might call that old. I don't know. She's inspiration to me. Talked to a few people about what we're doing here, what we did on the first show. A friend from Chicago really liked the poet. A friend from Sweden really liked the references to Martin Luther King. Friend from Cameroon was just interested to hear what I sounded like. I'm glad they cared enough to listen, and I hope there are lots more of you out there who make this show work better every week. Before I hand the mic to Mike, I'd like to mention Peter B. Collins and his free podcast, www.peterbcollins.com. He's sponsoring us in support of more progressive voices and critical thinkers in the media. And now, my friend and co-host, Mike Pelichek, we'll tell you what's in store this week.
Thanks, Chuck. How are you doing down there?
I'm fine. Hope you're doing well, too.
It's about 5 above, I guess, tonight. I guess everybody likes to talk about the weather, I guess. At least they do up here. 5 above, it's kind of wimpy weather, actually. We get used to the 10 below and 20 below. Chuck, tonight
we've got 76 here.
Tonight we've got Deborah Sweet, and she's the director of World Can't Wait. And she's in New York City. Doug Drame is the poet coming to us today from Ashland, Oregon. We're very excited to be able to have them with us tonight. And I guess with New York City and Ashland, Oregon, and I'm in Duluth, and Chuck's in Fort Lauderdale, and the producer of the show is out in British Columbia. And so I guess we're all pretty well spaced out, and I doubt if one grenade could take us all out at once. Well, if I get a chance here to talk about the New American Dream, and I'm going to go for it. The New American Dream, to me, it's all about values. It's actually old-fashioned. The American Dream we have today is all about wealth, attainment of stuff, and that's why it's coming down, I think. You know, when you see something like a state park or a national park or an eight-hour day or women getting the right to vote or a Social Security program, you know, we take those for granted, but when you see those, you can tell that someone really cared. And perhaps, or very likely, they spent their whole life making sure that something good happened, not based simply on attaining. But that's why I think it's all coming down in the U.S. now. So much is geared toward just getting more stuff, and I think George Carlin is right. The New American Dream, if there is time, gets us back to the good stuff. On the other hand, we all have to admit that we live in fascinating times. The idea that we live in an age when Bigfoot and UFOs have not, in quotes, been discovered yet, and when we can still research such fascinating topics as the JFK, RFK, MLK murders, Waco, Oklahoma City, and 9/11 mysteries, not that they're fun, but that they are fascinating, and they're still not discovered or accepted by the mass culture. Some say it's goofy, this stuff, not real, conspiracy stuff, and yeah, I'll give you that. It can appear that way, but it's goofy only if you don't read anything. I suppose it's goofy sounding if your sense of reality comes from American Idol, Today's Best Kitchen, America's Biggest Hamburger, Brian Williams, Katie Couric, Bill O'Reilly, Jim Lehrer. That's the way it was when I was a kid. We watched Gunsmoke, Bewitched, My Favorite Martian, The Flying Nun, Gilligan's Island, and thought that was all we needed to know. So when they told us Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK and that James Earl Ray killed Martin Luther King and Sirhan Sirhan killed RFK, we said, okay, and then went into the kitchen for an ice cream refill. My first inkling about what this country is really about came when I went to seminary in 1979 up to St. Paul. Dan Berrigan, Father Dan Berrigan, came to the seminary to speak, and I really hadn't even heard about him. I should have, but I hadn't. But he talked about going to prison for the Catonsville action, burning draft files, and as a priest, and he's talking to us in the seminary, for us to hear of a priest doing that is kind of mind-blowing. And he told us about America and the church and just a lot of different things. And I went back to Norfolk, Nebraska, and I told my parish priest about Dan Berrigan. I thought he'd be all fired up. But what he said was, forget about Dan Berrigan. And I thought it over and over, and I ended up forgetting about my parish priest. My realization about what this country is really about, what it has become, is, when they ruled that Bush had won the election by stopping the counting of votes. Stopping the counting of votes. That was the same year that I ran for Congress. I was running for the Democratic Party in the 5th District in Iowa. Anyway, I realized after they stopped the counting of votes, I realized, of course, they killed the Kennedys. I mean, that was my connection, and I think it was right. I feel they can do anything they want. And you might ask, who are they, in quotes? And I think that's a good question. It's another fascinating mystery to work on in the laboratory of the United States of America. And well, you can say that all this is conspiracy tinfoil, think like that about the Bushes and the assassinations and such, but I say it's just paying attention. Because remember, they want us to be afraid, and we cannot be afraid.
The mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
I'd like to introduce a segment called Profiles in Heart to those who have given or are still giving their heart and their soul, helping us all have a better world. Our thanks for caring. And remember, Mr. Byron does not teach American history in room 203 at 10 a.m. in Sheboygan. He didn't yesterday. He won't tomorrow or never. Mr. Byron doesn't know anything about American history. He does not want to. That's why he's been there for 33 years. If any of these names are not familiar, they're worth a Google search. And again, our thanks to Lori Berenson,
Julia Butterfly Hill,
Philip Berrigan,
Helen Woodson,
Carl Cabot,
Paul Cabot,
Larry Cloud Morgan,
Karen Katowski,
Luke Rudkowski,
Kevin Barrett,
and Jim Fetzer.
And now another new segment. We're trying out new things. Our question of the week. And you can send in your answers to radio@newamericandream.info, I-N-F-O, and we'll read them on next week's show. And the question I'd like to ask is about WikiLeaks. And there's a lot of talk about them over the Internet. And I just would like to know what you guys think. Are they for real? Are they sincere? Or are they a CIA or Mossad concoction? Are they like a limited hangout? Are they sincere? Are they doing what they say they're doing? Or are they working for the CIA or Mossad? Thank you. Send your answers to radio@newamericandream.info.
We had some interesting comments that came to us via the New American Dream website, the newamericandream.net. They're responding to a comment Mike made that Paul Tibbetts, pilot of the Enola Gay, the plane that dropped the atom bomb on Japan, Mike had commented that Paul Tibbetts is a killer, not to be honored. We had two interesting comments on there. Anonymous, we reject any notion that Paul Tibbetts is an American hero. This is the most feckless thing I've read in some time. And from someone who chose to sign her name, Nancy A. Brown, how dare you call Paul Tibbetts a killer? He did what he was ordered to do. How many more Americans would have died if the war was not stopped? You were not there and don't know all the circumstances, as I'm sure none of us do. Don't judge a man until you've walked in his shoes. I actually have a personal comment on that one. If the war wasn't stopped, my dad was scheduled to be in on the invasion of Japan, and so I might very well not be here myself, but I still can't believe that it was right to drop an atom bomb. On the other hand, there were more people dying in the firebombing than ended up dying in the atom bomb. So the firebombing runs that we did before that weren't very right either, were they?
No, Chuck.
On to the news briefs. We all know by now the daily newspaper in our town, the local television station, or the national news hour, the local radio news hour, is not going to cover anything that's upsetting to the power elite, not even National Public Radio, not even the Sunday Bulletin at Our Lady of Good Rapport. And that's a sorry situation. So we need samizdat, as in the Soviet Union, a way of passing along accounts of what's really going on. Might sound like exaggeration while we have access to the Internet, but if the Internet ever does get shut down, we'll certainly have to find other ways to communicate, ways to get the truth about what's happening. In any case, onward.
The first item we have tonight comes from Gary Coles in Duluth, and Gary writes about the White Rose. He calls it the White Rose in Egypt, and the White Rose was a resistance movement in Germany. He calls this a call to all Germans, the story of the White Rose resistance. It was in Munich in February of 1943, and I'll read quickly what Gary says. Savvy young Egyptians reminds me of another group of young patriots who likewise resisted at great risk to their lives, another thuggish regime, fascist Germany, 1943. That group of young Germans called themselves the White Rose. The core group consisted mainly of college students who were fed up with the lack of resistance against Hitler from their elders and decided to do something about it. They were clear-eyed, altruistic witnesses to their nation's corrupt, warmongering tyrants who were about to bring ruin to the nation that they loved. The major resistance tactic that they used was writing amazingly cogent leaflets whose purpose was to raise the consciousness of their fellow Germans to the certainty of national collapse if Hitler and his aggressive wars were not stopped. They demanded that Hitler step down. The Egyptian Revolution is replicating the White Rose resistance movement. And the public, if you're in Duluth or near Duluth, the public is invited to a free showing of the powerful entitled Sophie Scholl, The Final Days. It could be Sophie Scholl, I'm not sure. The Academy Award nominated movie for Best Foreign Film of 2005. The Final Days will be shown on Sunday evening, 7 p.m., February 20th at Peace Church, UCC, 1111 East 11th Avenue North, Duluth. The film portrays the true story of the brief life of the White Rose movement, told through the last days of the life of Sophie Scholl, the youngest and only female member of the doomed core group that wrote and distributed the leaflets.
We have this from Meredith Abbey and the Minneapolis Anti-War Committee regarding a forum taking place right now, tonight, in Minneapolis. Forum on Dissent and Repression in the U.S. and India. Free Dr. Binayak Sen. Stop harassing peace activists in the U.S. Going on 7 to 8:30 tonight, Thursday, February 10th, Blagan Hall. The panelists, Jess Sundin of the Anti-War Committee, Michelle Gross, Communities Against Police Brutality, Lalit Batra, the International Campaign to Free Binayak Sen, and the moderator, Professor Vinay Gidwani, Department of Geography and University of Minnesota. On September 24th, 2010, The FBI raided the homes of peace activists in Minneapolis and Chicago, seizing computers, phones, and large amounts of documents and personal items. Since then, 23 activists in both these cities have been subpoenaed to appear before a grand jury. No one has been charged. Lacking any material evidence, the United States government is clearly carrying out a campaign of intimidating people who did little more than speak out for peace and justice. On December 24th, 2010, Dr. Binayak Sen, a renowned physician, public health and human rights activist, was sentenced to life in prison by a sessions court in the Indian state of Chhattisgarh on baseless charges of sedition and conspiracy against the state. This extreme action comes on top of the arrest and conviction of several political and human rights activists in different parts of India the last few years. Come find out more about these cases, the context in which these acts of repression continue. I'm sorry, I've lost my place here.
That's okay, Chuck.
These things happen, right?
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Mike, why don't you tell us what Patrick Schmidt had to say?
Sure. This is a Valentine's Day note from change.org, and it comes from, Patrick Schmidt is the address of the Bio Senate. Valentine's Day, which accounts for 40% of fresh flower sales annually, is fast approaching. And if you're planning to order a bouquet from 1-800-Flowers, and actually I heard an ad for those guys on Mike and Mike in the morning this morning, and so I was thinking about this because I knew I was going to talk about it. The world's largest florist, you should know where most of those flowers really came from. At flower farms in Ecuador and Colombia, the countries that export the most to the U.S., two-thirds of the workers are women, and these women are routinely subjected to harassment and even rape from their male supervisors. They suffer eye infections and miscarriages from consistent contact with dangerous pesticides. In the weeks leading up to Valentine's Day and Mother's Day, they're routinely forced to work 80-hour weeks with no overtime pay. Attempts to form a union are met with opposition by police and armed forces. Many retailers, such as Whole Foods and Stop and Shop, have taken the important first step of offering fair trade flowers to consumers who want no part of these abuses. Fair trade certified farms must adhere to strict standards for workers' rights, which prevents the abuses described above. 1-800-Flowers is the largest florist in the world, yet they offer no fair trade flowers at all. Tell 1-800-Flowers to join other major retailers in offering fair trade flowers. Go to the change.org website to find out how to take action.
This program is being brought to you in part by the Iowa Ministry of Fear. If you're not afraid, you're not trying. Look out your window. We said, look out your damn window. What you see is communists, terrorists, criminals, Mexicans, and big bees. What you see, look, now. What you see are underwear bombers, crotch bombers, conspiracy theorists, burning backpacks, witches, and big bees. What you might also see are goldfinches, very commonly used by terrorists. Bird feeders are likely drop-off areas for terrorist stuff. Have you also seen slow drivers in your neighborhood, disguised as old ladies in white with blue or gray hair, slouched down so low it looks like nobody's driving? Terrorists. Call Walmart before it's too late. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Because we're your Iowa Ministry of Fear.
Now I'd like to welcome our poet of the night. Doug Drame is in Ashland, Oregon. He emerged as a presence in the underground literary movement in L.A. in the late 1960s. His most recent books include Rock and Roll Jizz, Propaganda Press, For a Dream Ended, Los Angeles Terminal, poems 1971 to 1980 by Covert Press. He was awarded the Penn Grants, awarded Penn Grants in 87 and 91. He's been nominated for 5 Pushcart Prizes in the last 3 years. He lives in the southern foothills of Oregon with his family, of his wife and family. His new chapbook, Rock and Roll Jizz, has just been released from Propaganda Press. And for only $6, you will never look at rock and roll the same again. Be the first rocker on your block to own one. Well, I'd love to own one. Hello, Doug. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Mike. How you doing?
Hello, Doug.
Yes, Mike. How you doing?
How you doing?
Yeah, how's it going?
Oh, I'm doing fine. This is our second show, so I, you know, by our third show, we're going to have it down perfect. I'll tell you that, too.
Well, it sounds fantastic. It sounds fantastic so far.
Okay. You've been doing this for a long time, since the 60s. Have I got that right, or probably before that?
Yes, I've been writing since the 60s and publishing since the late 60s. Started writing in the early 60s and started publishing about 1968, 69, something like that.
So you stuck with it over the long haul. That's impressive.
It's the only thing I can do with any precision.
Did you think it was going to be this long
haul? Yeah, I continue to do it and enjoy it, and it liberates me, so I continue to write and probably always will.
Yeah. And what have you tried to do with the poem? Is it political, personal,
It's everything. It's political, it's personal, it's sociological. I write about everything in my experience, whether it's inside of me or outside of me. And the book that you're that I'm kind of pushing now is called Rock and Roll Jizz, and it's mainly mainly poems about rock and roll that relate to rock and roll in some context. And some of the poems are political, some of them are pretty raw, some of them are funny, and my writing covers a whole range of area in terms of what's being said.
You think the pen's really stronger than the sword? Has that been your experience?
Well, yeah, I think it is. I mean, I've used the sword. I mean, meaning I've been in fistfights and all that kind of stuff, and I've been there, and that doesn't seem to work. And I know war doesn't work, obviously, but I think the pen, yes, does work. Because it liberates, because it tells the truth. And if you have a work and art that tells the truth, and that's what art is about, is liberation, I think. Also enjoyment and entertainment, but mainly liberation. You have to tell the truth. And I try to do that in each thing I do. And I try to get the truth out of me and on the paper. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Is it possible to, maybe you already answered this, but you know, I think about this when I sit down to write. I think about how, at least for me, how it seems like a measly response, at least for me, to fight George Bush or Barack
right.
Obama or poverty or hate with a novel. But you know, what do you think? You know, you think I'm good? This is really going to do some good?
Well, I don't really think in terms of it having an effect when I'm writing it. After I write it, I look at it and go, well, maybe this can help somebody or liberate somebody or tell the truth about something. But it is a force, I think, that each of us, you and everybody else that writes and anybody else that creates anything is doing it for a reason. And I don't think we're really aware of the real reason we're doing it. But I think that writing and all literature has to be pointed toward liberation, toward getting people to hear the truth. And whether that truth is the truth you're expressing in the moment or that's the universal truth, I think that it's all important.
Yeah. What if you can get everyone to read one of your poems? You know, what I often, when I sit down to write, I think, wow, if I could write something like Grapes of Wrath and everybody
right.
would read it, you know, maybe it might change things.
Right.
What if you could get everyone to read your favorite poem? That would change things, wouldn't it? And again, why doesn't that happen? Why is it so hard to get these works of poetry and prose into people's hands?
Well, concerning poetry, I think it's a way that it's been taught in the school systems. And the people have a real kind of archaic idea about what poetry is. They think of it in a total academic way. And they're unable to understand it. But most poets today, most poets I know and most poets write in a very direct kind of a way. And that seems to help help to get the point across. So you talk about Grapes of Wrath. I mean, that's one of the greatest, in my opinion, one of the greatest novels ever written, because it did focus on one particular problem that's a universal problem. And I think if writing does that, that the achievement that you have within yourself when you're writing it, I think that's extended to the rest of the world, and the rest of the world gets it. Whether that changes anything, I don't really know, but it changes you. It changes how the creator, the person writing it, and that has to extend outward, because all of our thoughts affect everyone, our mind affects everyone, and I think that literature has to be something that's used as a tool for these things. So I didn't sit down when I first started writing when I was a kid and think, no, I'm going to write to liberate the world, or I'm going to write to say something. I just started writing because it just happened. It just started happening. And I had to get everything out on the paper. And as long as I get it out on the paper and I can understand it, I figure, well, somebody else might be able to understand it, or might be able to get something from it, or it may change their thinking in a way that's more positive and more that leads to freedom more than other things do.
Mm-hmm. You once threw a bunch of your poems into the Michigan River. Is that right?
Yeah.
And did you jump in after them?
No, I didn't. No, I was at a point, I was very frustrated with writing. I just started, I'd been writing for several years before that happened, but I'd sent it to a publisher in New York City. It was the first book I ever sent out to be published, or attempted to be published, and it came back with a rejection slip. And at the time, I was very young, and it just blew me away. It overwhelmed me. So I took everything I'd written, decided that I'd never write again. I took the book down, and every scrap of paper that I had anything written on, I put it in a paper bag and walked from my apartment, which is on Ontario Street in Chicago, and walked down to the Chicago Bridge, overlooking the Chicago River, and threw the whole thing into the river. And I vowed never to write again. But that lasted a couple months, 3 months maybe, and I started writing again. It's a force that overcomes me. I don't think about it; just comes out.
And you kept writing ever since, and you've achieved some success, and it's helped you, and your writing has helped us. Could you read us a few of your poems, please?
Yeah, I sure can. I told you, I think, in my email that I was going to read three, but I'm going to read four if you don't mind, because the four are a little shorter than the three I was going to read before. So,
sounds great. Any background you have about them, you want to go ahead? Just it's yours.
I sure will. The first one I kind of picked because it kind of ties into the title of your website and show, and it's about experiences I had as a teenager in Indiana, where I was raised. And it's called Warped American Dream. No one in my hometown knew the connection between Little Richard and Norman Mailer. I would listen to Long Tall Sally and the flip side Ginny Ginny on my 45 RPM record player, locked up in my room for days while I read Mailer's White Negro. My old man and grandparents wanted to have me committed, and my chicken shit friends badmouthed me behind my back because I listened to nigger music and read strange books. Sex, drinking, reading, and rock and roll were the only things that filled me with life and wonderment. Everything else was dead and false. I was surrounded by bigots and the ignorant, even those my age whose spirits and possibilities had been blotted or wiped out somehow. Or maybe they were born that way. Poor white trash, the mutated offshoots of the warped American dream. The next one is about a bartender that I knew, had conversations with. We used to talk a lot about poetry and writing. He was a former English lit teacher. He had a lot to say, and we used to talk a lot about it. Anyway, I wrote this poem the first time I think I talked to him, after the first time I talked to him. It's called Former Lit Teacher, Now a Talking Bartender. Byron, Keats, and Shelley were the only poets he felt worth mentioning. in the general scheme of things, the world being what it was, a pragmatic place, but not without a little romance or the need for it. And those romantics were trailblazers, innovators, the revolutionaries of their time. What can you say about the poets today, he wanted to know? They're faggy college boys or ugly Mitchfits who are drinking themselves to death. Byron looked like Elvis, for Christ's sakes. He had charisma. They all three did. It was exciting to be in their presence. They were all coxmen. They were lady killers, society's dissidents, the boys that parents warned their children about in the 1800s. They were dangerous. Where is the charisma, the excitement? Where is the danger with the modern bunch, he wanted to know. As he set another bottle of beer in front of me, I had to just smile and shrug, feeling a little uncomfortable and wishing I had not mentioned I wrote poems. This one is kind of self-explanatory with the title. It's called We Are the Sons and Daughters and Brothers and Sisters to All Those Who Came Home from Vietnam. We are the sons and daughters and brothers and sisters of James Dean, Elvis Presley, Chuck Berry, and Marilyn Monroe. We learned to chew nuclear tobacco and spit in the eye of the status quo. We have survived the Vietnam era and numerous other atrocities to become your senators, your merchants, your drug addicts, your drug dealers, your corporate moguls, your drunks, your welfare shams, your doctors, your murderers, your lawyers, your garbage men, your prostitutes, your pimps, your filmmakers, your gurus, your homeless, your artists, your poets. We have all come triumphant and betrayed from the 1960s, from the murderous 1960s. We are the sons and daughters and brothers and sisters of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, and Che Guevara. We have torn the veil from hypocrisy. We demand freedom from captivity. We have watched millions starve while churches and temples and mosques feed the already well-fed. We have watched insanity become the norm. We have listened to the truth become the worshipped and cherished. We have watched the lie become the worshipped and cherished truth. We are the sons and daughters and brothers and sisters who came home from Vietnam. We are the children of the storm. We are the children of the fire. The last one, I'm going to read on a little lighter note, a more satirical thing, and it's called Waiting for Further Developments. It's about a publisher, a small press publisher that I once had. In fact, it could be about a couple of small press publishers I've had over the years. And it's called Waiting for Further Developments. My publisher doesn't answer my emails, but I know he's there, high on weed, playing his Fender guitar and watching reruns of The Gong Show. He doesn't answer my letters sent the old-fashioned way, but I know he's there, unemployed, more than half my age, doing 100 push-ups on dirty linoleum without taking a breath. My publisher doesn't answer his phone, but I know he's there, rolling another joint, contemplating the double-wide zigzag papers. He doesn't answer his fax, but I know he's there, drinking a Red Dog 40 and watching Madonna video, the lights turned out, strobe lights blinking on and off from the corner. My publisher doesn't answer his door, but I know he's in there, naked and jacking off, and by now starting to stink and bloat from his lack of simple, common courtesy. It's it.
Those are very good, Doug. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Do you have anything you want to tell us about, like regarding this new book or readings, or also tell people how they can get your book?
Well, the book is from Propaganda Press, a great little publisher out here in Palo Alto, California. They're little pocket books. They fit in your pocket, in your back pocket. They're pretty cute.
and they're really good little books. And the reason I contacted you originally was to try to peddle a few copies of it. It wasn't doing very well when I contacted you, but now the sales have gone up a little bit. I don't know what else to say about it, really. It's a great book, the publisher has a lot of books out, a lot of very fine literature, contemporary literature that is written by the best coolest writing today in the country, or in the world, actually. Don't know what else to say about that.
How about exactly where people would go to get it? Would they go to a website, or is there an email address?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, there is. Let me find that. Okay. There is an email. There is a... Let me find it here. Excuse me. There's a P.O. Box. It's called Propaganda Press. And it's P.O. Box 183. And that's Palo Alto, California. And the website is alt.current@gmail.com.
Very good. Did you write a poem today, Doug? Do you write a poem every day?
I wrote a poem today, yes, I did.
Is it
ready? Let me read it to you?
You got it?
Okay, I will read it.
Okay.
All righty, let me find it here. Just a second.
I think that's amazing. You write every day. That's cool.
I'm sorry, did you say something?
Yeah, I said it's cool that you write every day.
Yeah. Okay, this has a rather long title, and it's a little more abstract than what I read to you. Let me get the light here so I can see what I'm doing. Okay, this is the title, A World Without Me Crawls and Staggers By When I'm Turned Upside Down. The blood rushing like an ocean, like a scream of a foaming colossus, a picture of hammering sound, a laughing, dancing crowd without a center, a more smelly doorknob with red bullet holes, a maze of perfect snowstorms, a crease folded through the streets of Cleveland, a monkey with the face of Nero, a floor that has no bottom, a cloth of stones, blanket of splinters, a madrone tree sprouting from a cloud, a tender moment caught in a steel trap, a preposterous flag waving for blown apart body parts, a breathing, murdering mind denying it is, a camel running backwards in the halls of Congress, a doubty child older than his great-great-grandfather, a fragment from an impossible death that has no home in anything that lives.
Very good.
That's
Very
it.
Good. Thank you, Doug. And thank you for spending the last 50 years trying to tell us something. I appreciate that very much, and I appreciate the amount of work and the amount of time and the amount of trouble it's been, and it's not. I know it's not been all trouble. You've gotten joy from it too. And thank you for being with us tonight. And I hope you'll agree to come back on the show again soon.
I sure will. And thank you very much for having me, Mike.
You bet. Have a good night.
Okay, take care. Okay, you too. Bye bye.
Bye.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
Okay, this is Trivial America again. I'm going to try this one more time, see if I can get anybody out there who's a Big Lebowski fan. I'll give you a free copy, signed copy, of my latest book. It's called Camp America. I'm sure you've seen it in your grocery stores. In the opening scene of Big Lebowski in Ralph's Grocery, the dude is writing a check for 69 cents. What is the date on that check? And I'll be the first person to email the correct date to the show and receive a signed free copy. Opening scene of the Big Lebowski, Ralph's Grocery. The dude's writing a check for 69 cents. What is the date on that check? Be the first person to email the correct date to the show and receive a signed copy of Camp America. My email address is mpalecek at rconnect, rconnect.com. Thank you very much.
We're now to the main interview with Deborah Sweet. Deborah is the director of World Can't Wait. It was initiated in 2005 to drive out the Bush regime by repudiating its program, forcing it from office through a mass independent movement and reversing the direction it had launched. Based in New York City, she leads World Can't Wait in its continuing efforts to stop the crimes of our government, including unjust occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan and the torture and detention codes, as well as reversing the fascist direction of U.S. society, from the surveillance state to the criminalization of abortion and immigrants. Deborah, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, hello. Welcome to the New American Dream show.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
There are a number of things that that we have to talk about and only so much time, but why don't you start telling me what you think about this Egypt situation? But I want to keep this short because I have some other things to ask.
Well, you know, World Can't Wait's concern, primarily what we take responsibility is what our own government is doing. And in this case, any observer of the situation over the last 30 years would have to admit that Mubarak and the Egyptian government, having been really one of the main recipients of U.S. military aid, is only there because successive American administrations have supported it. And not one of them can claim that they didn't know. Back to Clinton, prisoners were being grabbed in third countries and sent to Egypt to be tortured. And we know this going back to the 1990s. This was the policy that Clinton began of extraordinary rendition. George Bush developed it into a fine art. And we have accounts of prisoners that were tortured, probably to death, and disappeared in Egypt within the last decade, since 9/11. So this is part of the legacy of the fellow Omar Suleiman that Barack Obama is saying, you know, should take over from Mubarak, the current vice president. And, you know, I will be down in Washington on Saturday with a lot of other people, I hope, protesting at the White House because we want our government to stop supporting this torture government in Egypt and to accede to the demands that Mubarak leave now. So I think it's important to follow what's happening in Egypt just because there's, you know, quite possibly quite a new day in across the Arab region. And in this particular day, to see people, you know, mostly in a secular movement, holding their heads up high and saying, you know, we don't want to go along with these reactionary, oppressive governments anymore, is extremely exciting. It's what we should have done when Bush was in power, I must say.
Well, we tended to go along with these governments when Bush was in power, though.
Yeah, well, we tended to go along with the Bush government, which really was the worst thing for the world, and the world is in worse shape for it now.
Yes, I agree. Well, we had a question come in, but when we made the announcement that we'd be interviewing you, someone sent a question to our website. They asked, you've amassed a large following of anti-war activists, which noticeably ignores the lies of 9/11 and the central role of Israel in destabilizing the Middle East, brings suspicion of a controlled opposition type of activism. So this person is asking why you omit the lies of biblical proportions that define the past decade since 9/11, the lies of the official story of 9/11. Would you care to comment?
This idea of controlled opposition is, I think really ludicrous to a lot of people who know that World Can't Wait has been out there from one administration to another, no matter who the president was, really challenging the lies of our government. And, from the we were formed in 2005 after Bush's second selection. And, our stand has always been that there actually should be an investigation into what happened in 9/11. There never has been a sufficient one. I am, however, not one of those people who thinks that what happened on 9/11/2001 explains everything, nor is even the worst thing that ever happened in the world. I think we have plenty of reasons to be opposing what our own government has done from before that day, on that day, and since then. And so we have a holistic look at the whole situation, and we're not going to get caught up in one particular narrative. On the other hand, everyone should be open to going where the truth takes us, and clearly our government has covered up the truth about that as they have about so many other things.
Mike has asked a question for next week. He's asked people to write into our site about WikiLeaks. Mm. And I'm kind of curious what your take is on WikiLeaks.
The information that was courageously revealed through WikiLeaks, I think, has been extremely important for, as I said, those people who are really seeking to understand the truth, primarily about what the United States government has done in these illegitimate occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan. The first thing that came out from WikiLeaks around all this was in April of 2010. That was the collateral murder video, which we've distributed widely and shown to hundreds of audiences around the country. And I feel that one particular 17 or 38-minute video is something that everybody should see. It's incredibly indicative of the way the U.S. went about this occupation in Iraq and also Afghanistan. It's very important for people to see. And then the Iraq War Diary and the Afghanistan, the Iraq War Log and the Afghan War Diary, of course, have also been really important to understand the level of civilian killings in both of those countries at the hands of the U.S. and its military, the way that civilian contractors have operated. The fact that there just was no concern about civilian deaths. This is why we say these are both acts of war that have involved war crimes. So, what WikiLeaks made available, and especially the people who made that available from within the U.S. military, I think were very courageous and really did humanity.
You're listening to The Fiasco.
Hello? Are we still there?
Yeah.
I'm here.
Okay. a couple of technical difficulties at the studio, I think. I think that I agree that that WikiLeaks has heroically released information. There apparently are some concerns that it's actually sort of a honeypot operation where the CIA or Mossad or someone is trying to catch people that might want to leak information. Do you have any thoughts about that?
No, I really don't. I have no basis
to know.
That
sounds pretty paranoid, but you never know when you're dealing with these big governments. Okay. Well, I certainly hope that your trip to Washington goes well and that you can make some difference. And thank you for World Can't Wait and for your long history of opposing U.S. wars and invasions and promoting human rights. I really liked the comment, stop thinking like an American and start thinking about humanity. I think that says a lot, and I thank you for that.
Good. I wanted to invite listeners to come to worldcan'twait.net and also to be thinking about March 19th, which is a Saturday and is the 8th anniversary of shock and awe when the U.S. invaded Baghdad and Iraq. This war and occupation has now gone on for 8 years, and contrary to the opinion created out of Washington, the occupation is not over. It's a permanent occupation, 17 bases there, the largest U.S. embassy anywhere in the world. In fact, the largest embassy of any country in any country. It's huge and really indicates the U.S. has no plans to leave. We are in a situation where we have a huge responsibility, I think, people living in this country, to do all we can to end this illegitimate, immoral, unjust occupation, as well as the occupation in Afghanistan. So we are going to be protesting all around the country on Saturday, March 19th, and certainly people can get more information at our website and, you know, be part of this movement, which is not as big as it should be or as big as it needs to be if we're going to stop these wars.
Well, all right. Thank you very much for being on our show, and I hope you'll come visit us again. And thank you, listeners. Our sponsors, Rock Creek Free Press and Peter B. Collins. Please stop by the New American Dream websites, www.newamericandream.net, and also the show, newamericandream.info. That's I-N-F-O. Join us again next week. Same time, same place. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. Good night, Mrs. Kalbash. Good night, Ken Lay, and good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
You never see my attitude in the press. That's what bugs me. You never see my point of view. For instance, gays in the military. Now, I don't know how y'all feel about it. Gays want to be in the military. Here's how I feel about it. All right? Anyone dumb enough to want to be in the military should be allowed in. End of fucking story. That should be the only requirement. I don't care how many push-ups you can do. Put on a helmet, go wait in that foxhole. We'll tell you when we need you to kill somebody. You know what I mean? I'm so sick. I've watched these fucking congressional hearings and all these military guys and all the pundits seriously. Oh, the esprit de corps will be affected, and we are such a moral... Excuse me, aren't y'all fucking hired killers? Shut up! You are thugs, and when we need you to go blow the fuck out of a nation of little brown people, we'll let you know. Until then... Where did the fucking military get all these more? We are the military. Is that a village of children and kids? Where's the neighbors? I don't want any gay people hanging around me while I'm killing kids. I just don't want to see it.